cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovec. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the worlds of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Well, Highland Park, Virginia Tech, Sandy Hook Elementary, an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. I mean, we could go on and on. The rate of gun deaths has increased 33% from 2011 to 2020, in the United States. We're talking about 9 years. This is according to every stat, every town for gun safety. With more on gun violence, awareness, and prevention, we bring in Cassandra Crafasi. She's associate professor in the Department of Health Policy and Management, deputy director of the Center for Gun Violence Solutions at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, of course, supported by Michael R. Bloomberg, founder of Bloomberg LP and Bloomberg Philanthropies. Mike, also a co-founder and supporter of Every Town for Gun Safety. And Cassandra, joining us on the phone in Annapolis, Maryland.
Cassandra, good to have you with us. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
When Carol was going through the names that we associate with acts of terror and gun violence in this country, it got me thinking that after there is an incident like Highland Park, like Uvalde, we talk about gun safety for, you know, a few days, but then it seems to shift to the back burner. How do we keep the conversation going without, you know, these big profile events being in the news?
Yeah, it's a really excellent question. And I think the first thing to keep in mind, we have been seeing these really horrendous high profile shootings, but we also have exceptionally high rates of everyday gun violence, suicide, intimate partner violence, community level violence, and we need to be thinking about those factors, those types of violence, in addition to these mass shootings. And so the things that we've really been seeing change in the last few years, largely driven by the youth voices, youth advocates, have been more attention on drawing parallels. So not just focusing on a mass shooting as an isolated event, but understanding how there are features or characteristics of a mass shooting that are similar to other kinds of violence and looking there for solutions.
I want to talk a little bit about access to firearms because this is something that comes up each and every day with instances like this. States vary in terms of gun restrictions and what people are able to buy. How do you prevent a gun from a different state going to a state like Illinois, for example?
It's such a challenging feature of our country. Our borders are porous for a reason, right? People and products move across them. But what that means is states with strong gun laws, like California, Illinois, Maryland, New York, they're at the mercy of states with weaker gun laws. And here is an opportunity to take a regional approach, to look at where guns that are recovered in crime or used to harm others, look at where they're coming from, and sharing that data across jurisdictions, across partners, to understand, are there targets of opportunity in terms of bad apple gun dealers? Are there individuals who are buying a lot of guns and bringing them across state lines? I think one of the most important factors to keep in mind when we're thinking about addressing gun violence, no one thing is going to help us address this problem. We need to be thinking about it from a multifaceted approach, and thinking about policy and thinking about gun dealers and access and supply, but also we need to be thinking about why people want access to firearms, what is driving this demand, addressing some of the fear, trauma, all of these things that are associated not just with COVID, but longstanding systematic racism and other issues that we've had in this country.
Cassandra, where does social media fit into all of this?
That's such a great question. Social media can be a tool to help spread messages, public safety, public health messages, for example. It can also be used as a tool to stoke fear or to spread misinformation. One of the things that we try very hard to do, hence our name, the Center for Gun Violence Solutions, is to really lift up the things that we know work, to try to counteract the feeling of despair or inevitability anytime a high-profile mass shooting occurs. And so we try to counter some of those pieces, but it can be, unfortunately, a tool to help spread misinformation and fear that can drive gun purchasing.
Do you think we get to a point just in the last minute that we have with you, Cassandra, where we start to see public funding going to research against gun research when it comes to gun violence? We all know about the Dickey Amendment and what that did.
We have seen over the last several years more federal funding coming from the Centers for Disease Control Prevention, as well as NIH, dedicated to specifically funding gun violence prevention. And I think that's really going to help us to do a couple of things, to grow the field so that we have more researchers trained to understand and study this problem. And it's also going to help us answer some basic questions. We are way behind where we should be in our understanding of gun violence prevention and policy because of the restrictions on federal funding. But as that's loosening up, as we have more funding coming into the field, we're going to see that change.
All right, we're going to leave it on that note. Hey, Cassandra, thank you so much for your time today. Cassandra Crifossi, she's Deputy Director of the Center for Gun Violence Solutions at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, as we mentioned earlier, supported by Michael R. Bloomberg, founder of Bloomberg LP and Bloomberg Philanthropies. Mike, also a co-founder and supporter of Every Town for Gun Safety.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Let's get to the domestic cover story of Bloomberg Businessweek. This issue, new issue, out on newsstands, the Bloomberg and at Bloomberg.com/businessweek, all about the AMC Entertainment CEO, Adam Aron, Tim and I have talked with him, who has cultivated an army of followers who sent the stock soaring in a retail trading frenzy last year. Who could forget that?
Yeah, the story by Felix Gillette and Eliza Ronalds-Hannon. Felix Gillette is media, entertainment, and telecom editor for Bloomberg Businessweek. He joins us this afternoon on the phone from New Jersey. Also with us is Joel Weber, the editor of Bloomberg Businessweek. He joins us this afternoon on the Access Line from Massachusetts. So people have been following Adam Aron, Joel. They perhaps know him from his time at Vail Resorts or with the cruise lines, the airline industry early in his career. Now he's been at AMC for a few years. What is he up to?
Oh, that is a great question. Well, in the time that we were sort of initially talking about this idea for this story, you know, we were in the middle of the pandemic. People were like, hey, movie theaters, that's not going to work out. And then lo and behold, AMC became this meme stock. And, you know, I don't think many people recognize that Adam Aron was the CEO of the company. And it sort of was like you couldn't have imagined a more theatrical CEO to be in charge of a publicly traded company. It happened to be the world's biggest theater chain. And he kind of met the moment in this amazing way where AMC became a meme stock. And he was very flamboyant, very amazing on social media. And it really kind of made him endearing to all these retail traders. And that set up this little nice little tension between the retail traders and the institutional ones, which we're all kind of familiar with now. But in the middle of all that, we realized that who is this guy? We have no idea. We have no idea what his backstory is. And he has this amazing backstory because he came up through like loyalty programs. So Felix and Eliza did this amazing job reporting this story. I feel like it's like just a perfect Business Week cover story. Felix, you know, you guys dug into his backstory so much. Like, how did he? Why was he the right person for this company at this moment?
Well, I think to an incredible degree, his entire career was really building up to this. I mean, the whole thing hinges on, I mean, meme stocks come and go. So you have to, like, keep these 4 million retail investors somehow engaged. And you have to keep them, you know, involved. You have to keep them on your side. You have to keep them loyal, basically, right? And the thing about Adam that's fascinating is he spent his entire career basically engineering these loyalty reward programs. And if you go back to 1979, his first job was at Pan Am. He did World Pass, it was the airline's first loyalty rewards program. Back then, the whole thing was like, okay, if we want to talk to our customers, we're either going to have to buy a really expensive ad on one of the three broadcast TV networks or in a national magazine. It's going to cost a lot. And suddenly there was this new way, computers are getting more expensive, you know, less expensive, more powerful. We can keep track of our customers. We can talk to them directly. You know, you kind of like take that. Adams, you know, did their first program. Then he went to Western Airlines, did a loyalty program for them. Then Hyatt Hotels, Vail, you know, Norwegian Cruise Line, the 76ers. Everywhere he's gone, he's kept working on these programs. Suddenly, you get to the present day, and using social media, suddenly, you know, he can talk directly to his customers. The fact that's amazing to me is that he managed to somehow extend this whole tradition to investors. Like, if you, you know, invest in us, you have AMC stock, you buy stock, you hold on to stock, we're going to give you rewards. You know, we're going to give you a free tub of popcorn, which sounds insane, right? It just sounds completely made up, but actually that's kind of what he's done. And to a remarkable degree, through some combination of his own charisma on Twitter and his own ability to kind of, you know, give this sense of exclusivity to this large group of retail investors that they're part of something special, he's managed so far to hold on to them.
What I love about this piece, among the many parts about it, is that you include some of the memes. The art department, just fantastic in being able to include these. And if you're watching us on YouTube, you can see some of these memes. Of course, they call them the silverback. So there are a lot of sort of gorilla-themed memes that have proliferated on social media. Felix, let's talk about gold mining. Because your piece has some incredible color as to how this deal went down.
Yeah, because we all kind of heard it when they announced it, and they said, you know, AMC's, you know, just acquiring 22% of this gold mine in Nevada. Everyone was like, what? Like, what are you talking about? Literally? No, it's a metaphor, right? It's a crypto mining operation. They're like, no, it's actually a gold and silver mine out there in the Black Rock Desert. So for months, we were like, we're dying to know, like, how did this whole thing go down? And one of the fun parts of the article, one of the fun parts of reporting it, was kind of doing the TikTok of, like, these guys, you know, showing how this deal came together. Jason Mudrick, Mudrick Capital, who really brought it to AMC. You know, Adam talking about why he wanted in on it. Them jumping on an airplane, you know, flying, you know, picking everybody up, going out to this tiny little airport in Winnemucca, Nevada, and then, you know, driving out to this gold mine at dawn. I mean, the whole thing is just incredible, the way it went down, and hilarious on many different levels. And then just, like, the thought of, like, what it's like. They kind of, like, pile into this trailer at this gold mine in the middle of nowhere. It's the only place that has Wi-Fi for, like, hundreds of miles. And then have to, like, jump on the phone and sell this to all the AMC board members. Like, this is why, you know, it makes sense for a, you know, the world's largest movie theater chain in 2022 to be investing in the gold mine.
Felix, I have to say, the gold mine, yeah, really made me scratch my head. I remember when that crossed the Bloomberg.
Yeah.
Reading your story, what made me scratch my head is Nicole Kidman, the first lady of AMC. Like every aspect of the story, you're just kind of like, what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's part of, you know, part of the branding. I think, you know, there's only so many ways – you can brand a movie theater chain. And I think typically people choose what movie they're going to go to based on the product and the proximity it is to their house, right? They don't care usually if they're going to go to like an AMC or Regal or whatever, and especially with the multiplexes. But there are theater chains out there that have done an incredible job of branding themselves. I always point to Alamo, which Alamo Drafthouse, I think they do a great job. And one of the ways they've done a great job of branding themselves is those pre-movie attractions they show you. It's always like very distinctive and cool feeling. And, you know, I think this is kind of like the AMC version of that, which is like we have an opportunity before the movies come on to do something that makes it feel like special somehow. In this case, you know, they went out, Nicole Kidman did these promotions, talked about, oh, you know, theaters are coming back. It's an American institution. It's so important.
Well, what we want to know in like a, another aspect of the story is like how much she got paid. Joel, quick thoughts as we wrap up here.
You know, just as we wrap it, you know, it's the meme stock moment. It's like, you know, we have these ebbs and flows to it. And I'm just going to be really curious to watch how AMC fares. You know, we're obviously watching Bed Bath & Beyond do its thing. And AMC will be one to, another one to watch.
No doubt about it. AMC, by the way, down 8% today. Joel Weber, Felix Gillette, thank you so much.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, the most read story on the Bloomberg is one about the individual who put an end to the crazy six-day run of meme stock Bed Bath & Beyond, a run that added something like 135% to the share price. The individual, activist shareholder Ryan Cohen, who apparently, Tim, now kind of wants to say bye-bye to Bed Bath & Beyond.
Let's get all the details.
No, not from... Bed Bath & Beyond.
Bed Bath & Beyond. B-B-B-Y. Not to be confused with Best Buy's ticker, which happens quite a bit. Divya Balji is Equity America's team leader for Bloomberg News. She joins us via Zoom from our bureau in Toronto, Canada. Divya, help us understand what's going on here with Bed Bath & Beyond. So Ryan Cohen, people know him from Chewy fame, with his now activist investor fund, RC Ventures, bought a stake in Bed Bath & Beyond back in March. So is he fully filing to get out of it? Because he may sell up to this many shares, right?
I mean, it sure looks like it at this point. You know, he has put in a filing saying that he would like to sell all of his shares and some call options as well on Bed Bath & Beyond. I mean, there's rumors going around that he's already sold his stake. There are other people who think that he might sell it in batches. You know, right now we're just sort of waiting to see what he has to say about this whole thing at this point. But, you know, you guys are right. It's just been such a wild ride for this stock at this point.
What I love about this is it reminds me, we talk so much about retail traders, right? This is their game and they're playing with all of these meme stocks. It says to me, though, this is a reminder, though, that there are some big time investors in this name as well and other meme stocks potentially.
And that's exactly it. You know, they have this whole notion of YOLO, you only live once, and they're getting into the stock. And they, for some reason, I cannot understand this, why they love Ryan Cohen so much. And, you know, when they get into it, they are pumping up their own investment and their own shares, right? They're getting excited about it and they're doing this. And now when you get like proper news that's coming out on the stock and a potential super large shareholder trying to get out of this company, that's where they're really taking a hit at this point. And I'm not sure a lot of them actually fully understand what's at stake at this point.
Yeah. Who is Ryan Cohen? Just to give our audience, if they're not familiar with him, like, who is this guy?
So he is an activist in the world of finance at this point. You know, his claim to fame, or at least what we tend to think of as his claim to fame, is when he got into Chewy, the pet company, and he made, you know, massive restructuring with the company. And since then, it's done really well. And I think that's what retail traders really got into in this case. When he got into GameStop, they were really hoping for a similar turnaround that they saw with Chewy. They did the same thing with Bed Bath & Beyond. And frankly, I just have not seen that with Ryan Cohen in both of these companies at this point. With GameStop, he brought in a bunch of new executives, mainly from Amazon. And with Bed Bath & Beyond, you know, he ousted the CEO and brought in a new CEO, and he also got three independent directors at the company. But fundamentals-wise, both these companies are still struggling at this point. We have not seen a corporate growth turnaround for GameStop, and Bed Bath & Beyond's most recent earnings results were still pretty dismal. For investors out there.
Is this meme stock rally different than the meme stock rally we saw in the winter of 2021, Divya?
Yeah, it is. It's definitely on a smaller scale at this point. I mean, when we saw it with GameStop and even AMC, you know, more than a year ago, you were seeing 100% move, 150% rallies on any given day, and swift reversals as well. Trading volumes were a lot bigger than we're seeing right now with Bed Bath & Beyond. And it really spread out to a lot more stocks than what we're seeing right now with these companies. So it's different and yet the same, in the sense that you are seeing big moves. They're just not as massive as what we saw a year and a half ago, or even almost 2 years ago.
I got to say, caveat emptor, you know, buyer beware. Like, I feel like when you look at Bed Bath & Beyond, I mean, you've got 44% of the float shorted. I mean, investors have to understand that there could be a big swing either way, correct? And just got about 30 seconds.
Absolutely. And that's really it. You know, there will be big swings. You have to be careful. Analysts are saying, pay attention to the fundamentals more so than anything else that's going on the retail side of things.
You look at the sell side of things in terms of analysts, you've got one buy, four holds, and 12 sells on this name. Just saying.
It doesn't match with what we've seen, but in the performance of the stock.
I am going to do some shopping there ahead of my daughter going back to college. So
you got those 20% off coupons?
Gotta love those coupons.
Yeah.
They send them to you electronically too.
Those things are great.
You
oh, yeah, of course.
I'm driving in my car, I turn on the radio.
Yeah, but you let me.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Drive.
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, we have about 10 and a half minutes left in today's trading session, and we've been bouncing around in today's trade. Right now, just turning off our highs of the day. We're in the green, as you heard from Charlie Pellett, on all of those major averages, but just up a tad, Tim.
Well, we're very pleased to have with us this afternoon Alan Zaffron.
We're going to warn you, Alan. We're a little wacky.
Yeah, we're a little wacky today, Alan. But that's okay. I mean, Alan, don't forget that Alan Zaffron, one time when he was on air with us, there was an earthquake in
California.
That's
right. Oh, my good memory.
Alan, it's good to have you with us. How are you?
I'm doing great. It looks like the markets are shaking too, but straight up recently, right?
Yeah, like I even, well, you know, you even got some big laughs from the control room there on that one. I like that. Alan's founding partner and co-CEO at IEQ Capital joins us on the phone from Foster City, California. So it's puzzling to me, Alan. We have Fed officials coming out and, you know, saying over and over again, day in and day out, we got to raise rates to combat inflation. We're nowhere close to being done with that, you know, in similar phrasing. But yet the market marches higher. What gives?
Well, what gives, Tim, is the fact that the technicals are once again ahead of the fundamentals. We see it time and again. So if you believe the stock market with this incredible technical flush upward we're having, the Fed's going to get it right. We're going to thread the needle. We're going to avoid a recession is what the stock market is signaling. Or at a minimum, the recession will be so shallow that you won't actually see an earnings recession. Companies will continue to grow earnings like 8% a year, and we'll mitigate all these concerns. We'll get through this scare, and we'll be back to a more normalized world. That's what the stock market's telling you.
Do you buy it?
I buy that the likelihood of the Fed threading the needle is much greater than it was a month ago. And the reason I buy that is you're finally getting inflation readings that are heading down. You're getting consumer surveys indicating that their belief inflation is heading down is also the case. You're getting confirmation from independent sources conveying that the Fed seems to be attacking this problem well. You also get it from the standpoint that it's been an interesting time. It turns out, and in this earnings estimates, overall earnings expectations heading into the end of the year have only been cut by about 2%. Heading into this earnings season, the market was pricing in about 15% cuts in earnings expectations. And so what's going on is earnings revisions are far less bad than what everyone believed. Of course, you get target or you get selected companies and sectors that are disproportionately hit and revised downward. But in aggregate, you're still at a point where you're getting a significant number of companies beating. In fact, turns out 75% of companies have actually beat estimates and on average by about 4% this quarter. And so that's what's going on. Earnings aren't as bad as people fear. Inflation is starting to come down. You had a remarkably oversold short-term technical condition. And if you do read the chartists and technical analysts that are out there, they'll tell you that the setup right now is for a continuation of this rally. As one example, Bank of America does a survey. Of
yeah, the fund manager survey, right?
Yeah. It's still reading at a zero, which has historically been incredibly bullish. So too many investors caught too bearish and too quick a time frame. And technical indicators are that this market is likely in the short run to move higher.
We've talked a lot about the retracement, right? From peak to trough, 50% retracement, you know, of that, and how that is a positive indicator for more upside to continue, Alan. And yet, that's a pretty significant retracement. So it does make me wonder, you know, when do we think that maybe things are getting a bit ahead of itself, especially when you have somebody like Neel Kashkari, who was one of the more dovish members of the Fed, saying, okay, we need to hike rates.
Yeah, he came out today and still seems pretty unclear. And Bullard came out today and said, you know, maybe we should still be raising by 75 basis points in September. There is a bullish argument to that. And that bullish argument is, much as we don't like the rate hikes, let's take the medicine now rather than take it later. If we do larger rate hikes up front, there will be fewer total basis points up in rate hikes we need to go. And maybe that's the best thing, is to take the tough medicine. You mentioned, Carol, something about 50% retracements. We went back and looked here. If we have this right, if you go back to World War II, there have been 19 different occasions where you had the market, the S&P 500 index specifically, fell more than 15%, you know, 20% or more basically down.
Right.
If the market breaks back up above that 50% retracement test, it signaled the end of the bull market all but one time, meaning there was some durability to the rally.
The end of the bull market or the end of the bear market?
It's the end of the bear market, and it's the beginning of a new bull market. So the bull markets, the indications are that once you recover more than 50% from that bottom, it's probably going to sustain.
All right. So anything bearish out there that you're seeing right now?
Well, sure. There's plenty to be bearish about. We still think in particular, China's economy is slowing. Europe is actually in a recession at this point. Their gas prices are way higher than what we are experiencing here in the U.S. That means you're going to have less ability to export goods and services abroad. You have a slowing economy. You still have tremendous geopolitical uncertainty, both with respect to China as well as with what's going on in Eastern Europe currently. And we still are in an environment where earnings growth rates, albeit they're not getting cut as much as feared, they're still being cut a bit. Mm. And so the prospective rate of growth of earnings next year is lower than what you would typically see at this point in the calendar year. So we're looking at growth, but slower growth than what you would normally expect looking 1 year forward. So fundamentally, we still have challenges.
Alan, just got a few seconds left here. What really struck me earlier in the week when we talked with our Gina Martin Adams, head of our equities team here at Bloomberg Intelligence, but reminded us that she kind of thought, you know, technically we're in a recession, but maybe we're already through it, but that, you know, economists are talking about a deeper recession again in 2023. Isn't that going to be potentially problematic? And do we as investors need to be kind of rethinking about that? And just got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's saying we're in the eye of the storm and we're halfway through it. There's another storm on the other side. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, you and I can't answer that because it's going to come down to how many times the Fed has to raise the Fed funds rate, because the effect of that rate hike takes a full year to really work through the economy.
Yeah.
So we just don't know yet. It's going to be dependent on a number of factors. It's the argument, stay diversified, and, you know, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Right, which means that potentially when, or depending on when the Fed ends, we could still be working through the impact of that well into late next year. Always smart. Alan Zafran, thank you so much. Founding partner, co-CEO at IEQ Capital, on the phone from Foster City, California.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox president Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.